of the welds were carefully inspected for any bubbles in the welds, any voids. When you close the door on that chamber, by definition, that chamber was the world's best shielded room by at least 100 dB. By all common sense, you climb into that room and close the door, and the room was roughly 300 feet square of floor, 70 feet high, roughly an acre and a half of floor space. It's a really big shielded room. You go in there and close the door, you think you've isolated yourself from every signal in the world. Well, you use a sensitive enough AM radio inside that room, and you measure a broadcast station that is 10 miles away. So the word shielding is relative. When he said blockage, yeah, the signal got weaker, and maybe it went below, let me drop. Maybe it went below threshold of the receiving equipment he was using at that time. Did the signal get blocked? Well, did the signal get 20 decibels weaker? 30 decibels weaker? That's a 1,000-to-1 ratio. 40 decibels weaker? If the signal was really thoroughly blocked, it would be 200 decibels weaker. The ratio of received signal blocked versus unblocked would be a number with 1 and 20 zeros after it as a ratio. Well, is the equipment sensitive enough to see that? The word blockage is very relative. If the receiving equipment I'm using is only receiving a signal before my hand is there, that's 30 decibels above threshold, and my hand creates 30 decibels of shielding, I will say, hey, the signal stopped. Well, if I use a receiver that's more sensitive, I can look down 40 decibels, and I put my hand there, and now there's 10 dB above threshold signal left, I'll say that, yeah, my hand made the signal weaker, but the signal is still there. The word blockage is very relative. To thoroughly block a radio signal, to block a signal by 100 dB, you'd be amazed how heroic a set of efforts have to be expended in order to do that. I know of a situation where 125 decibels of shielding was required. The jamming pods that are on the EA-6B Navy aircraft. Let me drop. That transmitting antenna on that transmitting pod that hangs below the pylon of the wing of that EA-6B airplane is transmitting zillions of watts of power. The transmitting horn inside of that pod is probably a foot and a half away from the exciter. The exciter has got a voltage-controlled oscillator, a bunch of amplifiers, a bunch of mixers, a bunch of switches, but the oscillator is running in the vicinity of 10 milliwatts, and that signal becomes lots and lots of power when it gets transmitted. And the transmitted output power on the feed horn is only a couple of feet away from that delicate oscillator. If you don't have 130 decibels of shielding between the two, you got a great big feedback pass where it oscillates on whatever frequency it wants to, and whatever frequency you've commanded that oscillator to, it'll say, the heck with you, I've got this great feedback pass, that dominates, I'm going to ignore your command. So there was a case where 130 decibels of shielding was required. You had to build a box, a miniature version of that box, like the anechoic chamber. Let me drop. You had to build two or three of those boxes inside of each other in order to achieve that. So the word blockage, as you can see, John, is very relative. And even if I carefully position my hand in just the right position, I could possibly get 70, 80, 90 dB of shielding, what looks like shielding. In reality, some of the signal is feeding around my hand, some of the signal is feeding through my hand, some of the signal is bouncing off the floor. And if I set everything just right, I can set up a situation where the multiple paths that are all being combined at the receiver site, I can set them so they all fall exactly 180 degrees out of phase. If I very, very carefully hold my hand, I can get a very deep no. Does that mean I've really created a shield? You can easily create a no in space by interferometry. You can, with transmitting another signal with another antenna, I can create a no at your receiving antenna. I can tell you I've created a shield that's so magic that you or I cannot see it. It's a gossamer thing in space that you can't see, and I've created the null. and you didn't know it, but I did it with a second antenna that transmitted the exact same signal, the exact same amplitude, 180 degrees out of phase. I can create a shield that you cannot see. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2WGB. Very good, Dick. Well, I understood that at 4 meg, the hand absorbs some of that energy. It doesn't reflect it like it would in the gigahertz. So the hand is absorbing some. And I think it would absorb the same at 4 or 7. There's not that much difference between it. But that was just the interesting part that I saw. I don't think it proved a thing, just like what you're saying. Let me let it drop, then I want to ask you a question. Now, from what you're saying, if we had this transmitting horn, this dish, rather, that you went behind and you had a receiver and you would read a signal there, a healthy signal. Now I take it from what you're saying that if that was a receiving horn and we had a sensitive enough receiver behind the antenna, we would be able to hear that signal also, correct?
The signal behind the dish was so strong, I didn't need a receiving horn. I could have a coaxial cable coming out of the receiver with an inch of wire exposed on the center conductor of that coax cable, a thoroughly shielded coax cable coming out of the receiver, has an inch of the center conductor exposed, and I'm standing behind that dish while a 1296 signal is being transmitted by the horn in front of the dish. If I did that, the signal would probably be 50 decibels above threshold in a good receiver in that location. The presence of the dish was creating a shadow. The shadow was lowering the signal amplitude by 25 or 30 dB. But since a good receiver is receiving a signal that's 130 dB weaker than what comes out of the transmitter, and I've created 30 dB of shielding, I haven't done very much. To really kill a signal in some particular environment requires an extremely high conductivity, six-sided box, highly conductive box, all of the edges very well soldered together, and no wires going through little holes in the box that are applying power to the box, because each wire going into the box, giving you power to run the electronics inside, is another antenna between the outside world and the inside world. And each one of those wires, let me drop.
Interesting.
Each one of those wires going into the box may be going through the world's best filter con, as they call it, a filtering device that allows the B-plus to go through, but tries to shield all other signals. To really shield a signal with a six-sided conducting box, you'd be amazed how difficult that is to do. The word shielding is a very relative word 99% of the time. N2XJN, K2RIW, go ahead, Wes.
Wait a minute, Dick. So what you're saying is what I said is correct. If you had a receiver behind a receiving antenna, you would be able to pick up some of that received signal, even though that you're in the shadow of the dish.
Okay, my first experiment was the horn in front of the dish is transmitting. Now, if the horn in front of the dish is receiving a signal that's coming from, let me pick a number, 10 miles away on 1296, line of sight path, and the dish has got, at 1296, it's got 20 dB of gain. And so I'm picking up a signal with 20 dB of gain in the main horn in front of the dish. And I've got this secondary horn behind the dish aimed directly at the back of the dish. I'm also going to pick up that signal. It's going to be, because I'm not getting the gain of the parabola, that subtracts 20 dB. Because I'm getting 30 dB of shielding, that subtracts 30 dB. The signal I'm picking up with the horn behind the dish will be, rough number, 50 decibels weaker. That doesn't mean no signal is there. There is a signal there that's 50 dB weaker than the one picked up by the horn in front of the parabola that's aimed at the transmitting site. Does that make some sense, John? KT2WGB, K2LIW?
Absolutely, Dick. I just wanted to make sure I was following what you were saying, because people would probably argue with that, but that's what I got from what you said. Okay, pick up Wes. Maybe he has a question or something to add to this.
For you to thoroughly make all signals on any one frequency disappear at one particular point in space, and your definition of disappear, I'm going to ask you, how many dB weaker are you talking about? Are you making the signal 20 dB weaker, 40 dB weaker, 100 dB weaker? You allow me to use a sensitive enough receiver with a high enough frequency stability, with a high enough resolution, a good phase lock loop system, which is sort of what they're doing when the Goldstone dish is listening to that signal coming from Voyager at 10 billion miles away. It's listening to a very narrow band, very precise frequency signal with an extremely narrow phase lock loop receiver system, and it's listening to a signal at probably minus 170 dBm. The signal generator can't go that weak by 50 dB. It can't get there because the shielding of the cabinet won't allow you to get there. How weak a signal can you receive and say it's above threshold and get data out of it? It depends on how much time you're willing to spend, how much hardware quality are you willing to invest. That Voyager does that. In fact, one of the things I'm going to do, I know within a few watts, I know how many watts Voyager transmits. I know how many watts Voyager transmits. I know how big the dish is. I know the frequency it's transmitting at. Therefore, I know its effective radiated power within a fraction of a dB. I know how many miles away it is. I know what the inverse square law is. I plug it into a formula. I'll tell you how strong the signal is that's getting into the Goldstone dish. It's going to be an interesting number. And you'll say to yourself, how in the world can somebody build a receiver that sensitive? Just a matter of applying the right threshold. Is there a limit to how weak a signal can be and still get data out of it? I think the answer is almost no. You give me the right hardware, the right technology, on the right receiving site on Earth, with a signal of known frequency, with a high enough frequency stability. You give me the right data, the right hardware, the right technology. No matter how weak your signal is, I think there's a guy somewhere on Earth who can design that receiver that will pick up that signal and give you that data. N2SJN, K2RI, W. Good, Wes.
Yeah, N2SJN, good evening, guys. As a proof of concept, Professor Mail gives you the choice. You can build the kit by yourself, and you can test it by yourself, or you can try it the kit, I believe, 800R altogether. This one has a 4 to 8 megahertz pair of fancy coils with different resistance, usable in various configuration, as well as required accessories, and it allows to arrange a complete scalar transmission line with fed equipment for demonstration purposes. Or you can partially buy the components and partially do it by yourself if you want to. Now, Professor Mail, developed, quite controversial, because against the pure science self-constituted theory, which is used to derive of all interactions that are known to the science of potential vortex. So instead of normally used Maxwell equation, Professor Mail chose Faraday's law of induction and hypothetical factor and proved that electric vortex is part of Durov. And potentially vortex propagates scalar light through space in longitudinal electric wave, that's what we agreed, argued a few times in the TechNet, and the properties of the scalar wave already been established by Nikola Tesla. So this phenomenon can now be studied and examined thanks to a simple device that anybody could build or anybody could acquire if they want to. Let me go further.
Also, Dick, how do we prove it's a scalar wave?
He did, in his scientific papers, and there's a number of papers, presented in science what mathematics that stands behind of it, that's what is really controversial, is that the scalar waves of Tesla that were studied by Mail are able to travel right through Faraday cage type shielding that stop ordinary transverse radio waves. And Tesla magnifying transmitter has been calculated to produce scalar waves with a velocity about 1.5 times that of light. That is from the Swedish conference with plenty of attendance from the science world. It was about 1,000 people, mostly academics. But we would argue and argue again about that fact, but what can I say? There are always people very much hard-headed to observe the new. And to achieve.
Let me try a different approach on this one, Wes. What you're describing as longitudinal waves, scalar waves, and whatever, electric vortex, and they travel at 1.5 times the speed of light. And it's a different kind of wave. If I could take the frequencies that are now thoroughly used, like many of the VHF frequencies with cell phones and commercial radio and whatever, our frequency spectrum is all pretty full, and everybody's fighting for more spectrum. And if I could create these brand new waves called scalar waves, longitudinal waves, that allow me to reuse those frequencies, that's very desirable. So I've got two or three very desirable characteristics here. Let me draw. 1.5 times the speed of light, reuse of the frequencies, different kinds of equipment. In some cases, the different kinds of equipment is going to be less expensive. And scalar waves and the study of scalar waves have been around for, I'm going to pick a number, 1 or 2 decades. Therefore, a person who says it can't be done should get the hell out of the way of the guy who's doing it. If somebody is really doing this and it has all of these desirable characteristics, he should be building a lot of them. He should be earning a lot of money. Unless there's some kind of great big conspiracy of radio people in the United States stopping him from doing it and holding him at gunpoint and putting him in prison or whatever, there should be an awful lot of this in use right now because it sounds so desirable. How many people are doing this? How many of them are being sold other than a kit as an experiment? With all these desirable characteristics, it should be fairly popular and growing pretty fast. N2XJN, K2RIW.
We're talking about the persistence of Mayer to present that new form of understanding physics to the science world has not long been done. Although he was working 20 years in a various number of universities, and he was developing the master behind that. You gotta understand, most of the people in science are being paid for their work, and they don't have the freedom to really being renegades. It will be shown that the scalar wave normally remains unnoticed, and very interesting is practical use for the information. And energy technology, for the reason of that special attribute, of course, mathematical and physical derivation are supported by practical experiments, and the demonstration will show the wireless transmission of electrical energy, the reaction of the receiver to the transmitter, the free energy with over unity effect, the transmission of scalar waves with 1.5 times of the speed of light, the inefficiency of Faraday cage to the scalar wave. Those are the quotes from one of the scientific articles that he actually developed. Lower down I see the maps that is following that, and he says that no high school ever has rebuilt magnifying transmitter. The technology simply was too costly and too expensive. In the way that results have not been produced, as is imperative for and acknowledge, I have solved this problem by use of modern electronics. By replacing the spark gap generator with a function generator and the operation with a high tension 2 to 4 volts low tension. So actually, the device that you have seen is a 2 to 4 volts, that's all. I sell the experiment and demonstration to the science world. Cell is, of course, expressional format. And some universities already could confirm the effect. The measurement degrees of effectiveness lie between 140 and 1,000%. The other reason why it's important this discovery could fall into the oblivion is to be seen in the missing of suitable field description. The Maxwell equation in any field pointers oscillate perpendicular to the direction of propagation, and lower down we have a mod following, plenty of that. As far as the resonance circuit interpretation, he states, of course he went to the vortex model, he went to the resonance circuit interpretation. The Tesla has presented his experiment among others to Lord Kelvin, and he already 100 years ago has spoken of vortex transmission. In the opinion of Kelvin, it is, however, by no means concerned a wave but radiation. He has recognized clearly that every radio technical interpretation had to fail because alone the course of the field lines is completely different one. It presents itself to assume a resonant circuit consisting of capacitor and inductance. Later on, you have a schematic diagram which shows very easy way to understand that. Setup 1 over 2 pi root LC. You have the two plates of the capacitor and they are connected in parallel to the coil. From the other side, you have a coil that is a B-filler coil with the reverse winding, similar one that was used in the free energy war that I'm studying. Now what you're doing is you're separating the resonant circuit by separating the distance between the plates, and the field lines of electrical field strength are being studied. So we're dealing with the open capacitor and the air transformer that would then be a transform 1 and air transformer 2 as we see those two bolts spreading apart. As far as the distance, he says that the distance is not important. You could have it at any distance. With a proper tuning, you would be able to achieve that effect. So if the both electrodes of the capacitor are pulled apart, then between the both is stretching an electrical field. The field line starts at one sphere, the transmitter, and they bundle it up against the receiver. In that way, the higher degree of effectiveness and very tight coupling can be expected. In the matter, without doubt, some of the effects can be explained, but not all. I'm not going to go to the whole of the articles. John, pick up.
Yeah, I've got a couple of words here, John. Stand by a second. What Professor Mayo, I think that's his pronunciation name, Mayo, is claiming is quite different than the traditional theory of electromagnetic waves, transverse electromagnetic waves. If I take the worst case situation where every professor he knows or knows of him, every university he knows or knows of him, disagrees with him, and everybody he gets a hold of in the respected world of radio and wireless is a detractor, a person who disagrees. Assuming that all took place, and he's under the worst possible conditions, as long as he's sure that his effect is real, all he's got to do is build a working model. Ignore all of these people that are saying terrible things about him. Build a working model which has a
reliable transmitting and receiving distance that is commercially useful. If he can prove that it is a commercially useful technique by which he's able to reuse these frequencies, get 1.5 times the speed of light, save energy, do all of these great things. All he's got to do is build a working model and say, the hell with all of my critics, here it is, and if it really does all that he says, if it has a commercially usable range and doesn't interfere with other ordinary pieces of equipment, he demonstrates that to the world that needs communication. They will beat a path to his door, and they will hand him money. And he could sell these things.
Dick, you didn't listen to what I said. He has the keys. You can buy the keys. You don't have to buy the keys. He has the...
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
I was able to hear everything you said by going over to the 375 machine, even though the 85 machine did get timed out. Yes, he is selling a kit by which you can duplicate his particular short-range experiment. But that is not yet a useful commercial product. Does he have the ability to build a useful commercial product? And even if everybody says he's crazy, if it does do useful commercial communication, he will become a rich man and people will beat a path to his door. What is stopping him from doing that, Wes? N2XJN, wait for the beeps, K2RAW.
Nothing is stopping him. The major problem in this country, what I find out, is understanding the nature of Europeans. Yeah, somebody can laugh from that statement, but there is something in it. I've been living there for quite a while. He's doing what he's doing. He has to support himself also. He has to work at this a certain level of certain universities, and he has to make the money. At the same time, he said, okay, there is the device that is working, put it to an iconic chamber, put it to the test, and tell me that it's not working. See, when there is no denial after the fact, the technology is presented, we may say as a silent abstract sentence. Interesting.
Mr. Dick, you know, one quick question for Wes first. Do you believe he has a commercially viable product? Can he demonstrate this over a reasonable communication range to somebody that requires radio equipment? If my taxi cab company is on the waiting list with the Federal Communications Commission and can't get a frequency allocation for my particular town, and if I don't have to use the normal radio waves, I use this new wave instead, and I can buy a working product from him, and he's got a commercially viable product, I'd be a fool not to buy it from him. What is stopping him from making a commercially viable product and selling it? I don't think there's any FCC rules he'd be violating if it really is a transmitter of non-TEM waves. If it's not a TEM wave, it doesn't fall under the FCC. It's a brand new wave. An ordinary receiver won't pick it up. He has no problem. He's not jamming anybody. And he'd make this product, sell it, and make...
Repeater, time out.
He'd make this product, he'd be selling it, and make some money. What is stopping him from doing that, Wes? N2XJN, K2RAW?
That was a good one. My father was a teacher, and my brother was a teacher. They are non-commercial people. They could do a lot, pitch a lot, but they are not for commercial. Professor Mayo was able to make a kit, so if you say that when you buy that kit is a commercial available product, now you got it. He's not interested with fighting with the world. He's not interested with the business. Not all of the people are made to the business. That's what I insist. The nature of some European, especially Eastern European, is so quite difficult to understand sometimes. And to achieve.
John, you got it. Okay, Dick, one of my questions when I saw that experiment is, when he tunes at 4 megahertz, TEM,
When he went to 7, now it becomes a scalar wave, changing none of the equipment. Same antennas, same oscillator, same structure. How does that happen?
There's no simple answer for that one, John. Let's assume that my father died and the death certificate said that he died of bacterial pneumonia. How do I prove that he didn't die of viral pneumonia? To prove a null set, to prove the lack of something, can be very difficult. This professor says that when he changes the frequency from 4 to 7, that it no longer is a TEM wave, it's this new scalar wave, this new longitudinal wave, this new vortex transmission, whatever words he's using. The fact that I can create a null in space by setting up an environment with a hand, a sheet metal reflector, I can easily null a signal at some frequency. People do it all the time. In fact, there is a company selling a product. It's called the American Nucleonics Company in Los Angeles, California. Let me drop it. They are selling signal cancelers. If you were operating a military Jeep and you've got 4 whip antennas on the rear bumper of that Jeep going to 4 radios, those whip antennas are so close to each other, they're jamming the living daylights out of it. Those 4 little radios are jamming the daylights out of each other. American Nucleonics makes a device that you properly connect it between those 4 antennas and those transmitters. It creates a null. When transmitter number 2 is on, it creates a null in the 2 adjacent antennas, number 1 and number 3. And that null can be 60 or 80 dB down, and therefore you're operating that transmitter number 2 while receiver number 1 and number 3 are operating with no interference. It's called a signal canceller. A fancy piece of electronics can do that. There's a number of those installed on Air Force 1 at this time. That's how all those transmitters on that airplane work simultaneously without jamming each other. So nulling a signal in space, if you're smart enough, is relatively easy. That doesn't prove you've switched over from one wave to another wave. It's a piece of evidence. It's not a proof. And the fact that I've created a null, and now I say that it's not a TEM wave anymore, it's a transverse wave, it takes more than just those words. This is one of those fairly delicate areas where you have to step-by-step prove every other possible explanation before people will accept your claim. And even if nobody accepts your claim, if you're correct, and if it's a viable concept, you build a working model that works at a commercially viable range, and it has the desirable characteristics of speed of light 1.5 times, and it doesn't you are allowed to reuse all the frequencies that are right now filled up because you're not radiating a TEM wave and you're not interfering with those. With all those desirable characteristics, build one working model and demonstrate it to people who really need that communication, and they will beat a path to your door, and they will fill your pockets with money. And a pure person studying technology who doesn't want to make money, you can say that that's what he's doing, and therefore it's not becoming a commercial product. The way to really prove something is good is to prove that people want it. And if it really has the characteristics he says, they will want it. They'll beat a path to his door, and they'll fill his pockets with money. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
KC2WGB. Well, Dick, I think if I had a receiver, whatever format he's using, let's say it was AM, and I tuned to 4 megahertz, I would hear him. And if he changed it to 7 to produce his longitudinal wave, I think if I tuned that receiver to 7, I'd hear that too. I don't see how it could be different.
Okay. If we try to measure the degree of effectiveness, which actually he says is 1,000%, so we're talking about over unity. So if the law of conservation of energy should be evaluated, then the only one interpretation is left. Dolphin capacitor withdraws field energy from its environment. So without consideration of this circumstance, does the error deviation of the every conventional model calculation lie at more than 90%? So there are rather, I would say, our concern oscillating fields, because the spherical electrodes are changing in polarity with a frequency of approximately 7 megahertz. So they are operated in resonance. The condition for the resonance reach identical frequency and opposite phase. And the transmitter obviously modulates the field in its environment, while the receiver collects everything with which what fulfills the condition for the resonance. And to achieve
it. John, to answer your question, when he tunes from 4 megs to 7 megs and he gets this null with his hands present, you heard me say before, how deep is that null? You allow me to tune my 7 megacycle receiver connected to his nulled out sphere on the right hand side. You allow me to connect my sensor to receiver there. If he's really putting a 7 megacycle signal into the left hand sphere, I will measure a signal out of that right hand sphere. It might be, because of the hand being present, the signal might be 25 dB weaker, but that could easily be 70 dB above threshold of my receiver. I will measure a signal there. Until he puts one of those spheres inside of a perfect anechoic chamber, he cannot stop the TEM wave from going from point A to point B. He can null it out by some number of decibels with the hand, with a reflecting sheet of metal, with another interferometry antenna, with a signal canceller. He can null it by some number of dB. He cannot make it go to zero. You see what I'm saying here, John? KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Yes, Dick, I understand exactly what you're saying. But I was just wondering, if I can detect it with a receiver, and it's not a longitudinal wave by itself, because there's still going to be some vestige of the original AM signal, whatever it is, the TEM wave. Okay.
Yeah, Wes, his experiment is giving you a piece of evidence, and he's got some very good sounding explanations that support his philosophy. I know there are critics out there that are giving him some grief. And so, because he is fighting 170 years of tradition of conventional radio, it's predictable he's going to get a lot of flack. He's going to have to use a large number of steps to prove every possible alternate explanation is not taking place. To really null a radio wave is extremely difficult, depending on how many decibels of null you're trying to create. And he could bypass all of that by making a commercially viable product that has all this extra efficiency, all this extra excess energy, 1.5 times the speed of light, and reuses the frequencies. With all of that desirable characteristic, all he's got to do is build one commercially viable model, and people will beat a path to his door. He won't be able to build them fast enough. And even though he doesn't want money, he can be giving it to his children, to his relatives, to his university. He'd be a hero. What's stopping him from doing that? N2XJN, K2LIW.
I'm thinking for the best answer for you. When I'm able to buy a lot of equipment right now for pennies, $50, for $50,000 device whatsoever, because it's used one. In Europe, everything is more expensive. There's a 24% VAT, which is the suspect on it. What's up? Now, I don't know the personal situation of Professor Mayo, but I know that if I told my father, who has plenty of good ideas, and three faculties, physics, mathematics, and chemistry, and I told him that, you know, build something commercially, he said, no, this is not my work. Let me drop. He made the perfect device for you and anybody else to try it. He is not interested, or he doesn't have the money to build commercially viable device, because commercially viable device has to go through all of this approval or whatsoever. I know that most of the devices that come to Poland have to go through a certain certification before they would be approved to sold, to be sold. And it costs 1.5 times of that, or only sometimes 2 times of that, which you can buy in the U.S. So there are many things that happen. So, again, if it was my product, you would say, no. I know what I know. I know what I see. I know what I modeled. I know what I built. But I'm not the business person. Enter it to you.
He doesn't have to go through an approval process. If he is not radiating a conventional TEM wave, he is bypassing the Federal Communications Commission. He's not using their frequency spectrum. If he doesn't want to build it himself, he can hand the plans to somebody who does want to build it. If he's worried about losing the patent, he can have that man sign a non-disclosure agreement. There's lots of ways he can get around this. If he doesn't want to build it, all he's got to do is convince one other person to build it for him, and they share the profits, or don't share the profits. He doesn't need approval if he's not using the FCC frequencies for transmitting a TEM wave. There's a whole lot of ways that I can bypass the FCC. If I can use any frequency I want in the United States, as long as I keep the radiated signal below roughly 1/10 of a milliwatt. It turns out to be some number of volts per meter. I think it's minus 15 volts per meter. I forget the exact number. But as long as my signal is weak enough, I don't need a license. I don't have to have type-approved equipment. If he's not using the conventional frequencies, he doesn't have to worry about approval. That's not a gating item. Him not wanting to build it is not a gating item. Somebody will do it. Him not having the money is not a gating item. Somebody will supply the money. If it's a commercially viable thing, and if he doesn't want the money, but he gives the money to his university, and gives it to his relatives, and gives it to his friend. And keeps himself happy. He would achieve the proof. So as you can tell, something's wrong with the story. Okay, this was segment number 1,481. Bye-bye, you guys. We'll try to settle all this a little bit more next week. KC2WCB, K2RAW, go ahead, John.
Visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Jet Mobile.
Friday off. Thank you. Kiss my rear end.
You guarantee that's going to happen. The same with New Year's. So, we had to, what did I have to do? Might be the guy I work with. Okay. I'm just following this guy in. So, what happened was, they still didn't give us the word on tomorrow. Today, I'm picking up a truck in Stony Brook, and then I got to go work on the other side of the Throgs Neck Bridge. So we had an early start. I'll be in that truck in about 10 minutes. And then, so after that, I'll be off the radio. I should have taken my HT. And they're going to close the rest of the week. He just gave me the word on that. Like, as far as Thursday, Friday, they're going to close. So we're not going to work after Christmas for the rest of the week, which I just lose pay when that happens. And tomorrow, he still didn't give me the heads up if it's half a day, a full day. I don't know. It's probably going to be half a day. But if I have to do the same thing I'm doing today, it's not going to be half a day for me, that's for sure. And that would kind of stink because everyone's probably going to get paid for the full day. And I know if I'm going out to the other side of Throgs Neck Bridge, I'm not getting home half a day.
Yeah, well, that's like me, Greg. I know these SOBs, they're going to probably send me to the Trade Center. I already know for a fact, Trade Center shut down at 11:30 tomorrow. Most of the trades are splitting. I got that word Friday from a lot of the guys. So, it'll be interesting. Today I gotta work on a couple of machines. I'm gonna hop on the subway, shoot up to Lafayette and Canal, walk a block and a half, go to Ferrara's, pick up my Stufelis, those little things people call honey balls, us Italians they're called Stufelis. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. Probably means honey ball in Italian.
That's funny. Yeah, no, you'll be half a day tomorrow. Hey, what do you call it? You'll probably be familiar with this stuff. I was looking at, one guy has a very clean, Heathkit 220 SB amplifier, and, he wants 600. I could probably talk him down to 5. That's just 600 is pretty much the high end of that amp. And then, this other guy's got a Kenwood 922A. And the thing was like, he said, I'm telling you, this thing was never used. He said, it's like, new in the box, and he's got the box and everything else. He wants 1,000 for that. Would you go for that amplifier? And it's got the 160 on it, too.
Right. I'm sorry, but no, I wouldn't go for that. I like my ICOM 7600 with all the latest and greatest and roofing filters and digital signal processing and all the conveniences of all the filters and how you can shape everything. And I don't know. I'm always leery when buying used HF gear. I did it once, I got burnt, and I'll never do it again. So, it don't make a difference what you buy anyway, because the moment you buy it, 6 months later, somebody comes out with a new radio. But as far as amplifiers, you know, if it was not abused, the guy was a heavy-duty contester where he ran it at freaking 1,500 watts the whole time for hours and hours and hours and hours and beat the living heck out of it, you might need tubes, you might need some other parts, and I don't know, man. Just seems like too much work.
Oh, this one he said is new in the box. You know, he seemed like a nice guy. He was an older guy, and we were talking for a while. He's like, I bought that amp, and I never even used the thing. He goes, it sat in the box. I opened it up, looked at it, put it back, and I never got around to doing the rest of the stuff, and now I'm just too old to carry it. So, I kind of believe him. I'm thinking if it was new in the box, a thousand's worth it. How much is the amp you got? What did you pay for that one?
I got an AL-80P. It's a kilowatt. I paid $1,200 for that. So, Meritron AL-80B.
I think it was called an AL-80H. I think. I bought it from a guy around here. That guy owns the Sonorama shop. And then I did get my antenna off, and my wife start yelling at me, spent too much money, so I ended up selling it. That was a nice amp. I think it was the one that was more expensive, a little bit more expensive. I think it was the H, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's the $2,300 amplifier.
I probably should have stuck with that one. That one was pretty clean. That I should have stayed with. I flip things around a lot, you know, if I say lay around, like I just bought that 990 Yaesu. It's still sitting in the box, but I'm pretty happy with that. That radio is immaculate. And he's got the master carton, and then the carton they ship it in. You know, and all the factory stuff with it, and all the original packing. That's good. If I went to flip that radio, I'm not going to lose money, that's for sure. That's a nice radio. I'm pretty happy. So I just got to get everything hooked up. I saw it on an antenna yet.
Yeah, no, I don't do HTV for all that legal stuff. Yeah, no. I went a little nuts. I bought one of those Yaesu 817s, so I wound up pitching that. I sold that. I got my A57 in the truck. I'm selling that. I'm going to put the ICOM 7000 in the truck. So, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm either going to put that in the truck, put the, I don't know. I got too many radios. I'll be down to three radios once I sell the A57. That'll be good. One for portable use, one in the mobile, and the of course the big station at the house.
You know, there seems to be two 7000s. You know, the one I'm thinking of is the one where you could actually get TV on it if you had that extra module or whatever it is. That's the one you're talking about for the car. Expensive radio.
To be honest with you, I just use it as a radio. I have no idea about watching TV on it. The newer ones might have that. I don't think mine does. Mine got mine. The radio was 2 years old when I, well, 2 years in the ICOM line. That's when I bought it. It was like after the third software revision in it.
That's some radio. I always liked that radio. But, you know, it's weird because it's if you want it to be, it's like a never-ending hobby. You keep switching and flipping and switching. And I've had so many radios, but then I flip them. You know, after a while, I play with it a little bit, then I sell it because I think I want something different. You know, I don't know. So, we'll see. But I think I may just stick with this 990 because it is a nice radio. So, maybe I'll stick with that. My favorite was the 102. That whole thing was, I had such a nice setup with that. They don't make big radios like that anymore. Like in other words, the separate antenna tuner that matches it, the oscilloscope, the speakerphone, the phone patch speaker, you know, all these different things they had with it. And then the VFO, and everything was separate. It would take up a whole table. It was very impressive to look at.
I don't know, my station takes up a whole desk. I got the big Palstar auto tuner. Dummy load sitting on top of that, the ICOM power supply, the ICOM 7600, the magic speaker, and then the big old AL80B amplifier. Takes up the whole 4 foot section of the desk.
Now what are you running for an amplifier?
What was that about the amplifier?
Oh, I'm sure that's not an amplifier. What are you running for an antenna?
Right now I got a homebrew center fed dipole. I got my base of my tower in, and the weather screwed me up, and working screwed me up, so my 40-foot mast is laying on blocks in the backyard, and I'm hoping maybe, sometime in the spring, I can get up my Force 12 CS3SS.
Definitely got to get an antenna. You know, I have a tower, like you, mine's laying down. So I'm going to have to set that up, you know, and then whatever. I guess I could throw up a dipole for now, what I'd like to do. I got to get something going on there. I guess I could just make it myself. You know, I always wondered, too, what would happen if I used, like, I could get a ton of 14-gauge wire, or I can get 10-gauge wire from working. I mean, if I just threw up a 10-gauge wire, I mean, that would work, right?
Yep. You figure out what frequency you want to operate, divide it by 468. That'll tell you the length of the antenna for a half-wave bipole.